Welcome to the Stepmomming Made Easy podcast. I'm your host, Kristen Skiles. Stepmomming is a wild ride, but you don't have to go it alone anymore. I'm here to give you validating insights and powerful shifts to build a stepmom life you love. This is your safe space. Welcome home, my friend.
Hello, and welcome to the Stepmomming Made Easy podcast. I am so excited that you are here. We are talking about a topic today that is obviously very close to my heart for recent events in my life. I have a very special guest today. Hi, Kimberly. We are talking today all about adding an hours baby to the family and what that transition looks like. And full disclosure, we are actually talking about this back in September before baby has even arrived. So this is my personal little pep talk about what to expect in a few months. I'm just so excited that you are here. We planned to talk about this a while ago before I even knew I was pregnant. And now here we are.
Here we are.
I would love to read your bio if you don't mind me taking a little bit of time to do that and give everyone some insight into who you are. Kimberly King is a multifaceted entrepreneur and owner of Honestly Mum. She is a bonus mom to two girls and bio mom to two boys. After meeting her husband in 2016, Kimberly dove right into the deep end of stepmotherhood without a life vest, and it's been a wild ride ever since. I can certainly relate. Just 5 years into their marriage, the family has moved quite a bit. They lived in the Caribbean for several years, and now they reside in her husband's home state of Pennsylvania. As a biracial woman raised in the inner city of Los Angeles, Kimberly, who is also a first-generation American, specializes in interracial and intercultural stepfamilies, peeling back the layers of race and ethnicity. She works on identifying how these differences are helping or hurting your overall stepfamily dynamic and how to improve on your current situation. As a once expat herself, she is also well-versed in overcoming struggles relating to relocation and all of the hard parts of doing that with another new hours baby in tow. Her practice focuses on keeping marriage first in all facets of building confidence in your role as a step-parent. When Kimberly isn't working with step-families, the stay-at-home mom moonlights as a chef creating beautiful home-cooked dishes. Amazing.
Thank you. You make me sound a lot more exciting than I am.
Oh, that's not true. Oh my goodness. I'm so excited you're here. I'm so excited to be talking about this topic specifically because you've had a couple of hours, babies. Yes.
Yeah.
It was also amidst a lot of transition in your life.
Yeah. Beyond that. I feel like the transitions just haven't stopped. We're constantly transitioning into some new phase of what our lives look like, which is, it's exciting, but it's exhausting too.
Step family life keeps us on our toes.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's go back all those years. How did you first start preparing your stepchildren for adding a baby to the family?
I have this really vivid memory. It's like a family memory. We talk about it all the time. We lived in Seal Beach, Orange County, California. This was before we started moving all over the place, but we used to walk on the pier all the time. So it was myself, my husband, and his two daughters who were 3, maybe 4 and 6 at the time. And I remember walking and my younger stepdaughter was on my husband's back and she says, "I'm going to get a brother. When you get a baby, it's going to be a boy." And we thought, "Oh, okay." And I don't know if I was expecting at the time or how close that was to finding out that I was expecting, but sure enough, I did. She got a brother. I got a boy, just like she predicted. And I think that they were just already really excited about the idea of us having a baby. I'm not sure that we made it a big grand talk or anything like that, but I think we were just really lucky in that they were excited about it. Especially my younger stepdaughter, because she hadn't experienced being a bigger yet. So she was the baby sister. Yeah. And so becoming a big sister was like a really big deal for her. And then for my older one, once we found out we were having a boy, that was really exciting for her to be getting a baby brother. So I'd say we were in the clear as far as like dealing with managing expectations. I think when the baby came, that probably created a different change because there was a person now. So then they didn't want to leave as often as they were regularly leaving because they wanted to be with their baby. But they also, of course, want to be at their other house. So I think they started to experience this internal conflict of like, well, this is exciting and this is what I want to be here for, but I also have this other life. So I try to imagine what that conflict would be like for children. It's been an ever-changing thing as they've gotten older, as there's been another baby. But the beginning was pretty smooth for us.
That's great. How old were they when you had your first son?
They were 5 and 7.
Okay. And no siblings in the other home?
No.
I love this sort of like naivete that they have going into it. And it's fresh and exciting. For us, just personally, Krista has a sister in her mom's house. And her sister cried a lot because she was a baby. Krista was so young when her sister was born. I want to say she was probably 5 or 6. It was like right around kindergarten. Mm-hmm. And she kept telling us like, I don't want you to have a baby because I don't want to deal with the crying. So I love that your stepkids, not only were they open and receptive, but that, you know, one stepdaughter was like, I've already had the vision. I'm going to get better. So in your dynamic, did you tell the ex that you were expecting? And if not, why not? If you did, why did you make that decision?
You know, my memory fails me. I want to say that at the time, my husband, myself, and their mom, we were on a group chat. And so I think that's most likely how we delivered the news. Knowing myself, I'm sure it came from myself or my husband, because I don't think that that would be appropriate information to receive from her 5 and 7 year old. We have one way in front of the children. And then, of course, the adults have a very different dynamic. And so I would never want anyone to kind of receive that information and for it to kind of sting, or for them to just not be ready to receive that information. I wouldn't want anyone to be blindsided by their children with that kind of big information that is not only going to shift our lives as the family expecting a baby, but it's also going to shift the other house's life too, as it relates to the other children involved, how it will affect our availability for certain things. So it's a lot to take in on the other side as well. So yeah, I'm sure we've found the best way to deliver that message just between the adults to start.
Yeah. I think there are so many ways you can go about this, and it's sort of a situational, what's best for your family. I'm thinking back, we found out Krista's mom was pregnant because of Krista. She was so young, she couldn't keep a secret. So we found out before a lot of friends and family, just by nature of her being a little kid who can't keep a secret. And I personally reached out to Krista's mom. We have a great relationship at this point. And I told her I was expecting. I actually told her, you're going to be an auntie, because we're so close. And that was how I was able to phrase it. Yeah.
I love that.
But that's certainly not how I would propose everybody do it.
Right, right.
That's not going to work in every situation. So it's interesting for me to hear different people's perspectives and kind of the spectrum of how it happens.
I think one of the other things too was, I think what we probably told their mom first, and then eventually told the kids. But if I can think back to just all the feelings of it, and now having a second baby and how I compare those two experiences, sometimes it just becomes one of those things that like you want to hold on to and you want to share it within your household. And within your household are these other children. And much like in Krista's case, kids can't keep a secret. So whatever's happening in your household, even if it's your well-kept secret, it's also the information that belongs in the other household too. And sometimes that is a little hard for me to process. And I think after almost 7 years of being in this blended family dynamic, I've discovered ways to help ease my own thoughts. But it's hard when you're going through something so sacred and so special, and you have almost no choice but to invite another household into this special time because everyone is affected. You would just hope that when and if the roles were ever reversed, that everyone can be as respectful or as gracious with your precious information as you were once upon a time. I'm sure there's probably a lot of stepmoms that can relate to just wanting privacy and some very normal things to want to have privacy over.
Yeah. I think this brings up a really important feeling for us to talk about because as stepmoms, I think we often feel like we share so much of our lives and wanting this to be something of your own that you don't have to share, I think is perfectly natural.
Yes.
I'll tell you my little story. So back here in September, Kevin and I are talking like birth plan and plans at the hospital. And I had a friend recommend to me, take 24 or 48 hours for just your family. Don't have people come up to the hospital. Enjoy that time, work on healing, catch up on some sleep, whatever. And I proposed this to Kevin as like, tell me what you think. And his knee-jerk reaction was, I'm okay with that for the four of us, me, you, Krista, and the baby, for a period of time, and then inviting everybody else in. And then my mind, the way my mind works, I go down this rabbit hole of, well, she's either at her mom's house or she's with my in-laws because we're at the hospital. And so then I'm not having my in-laws come up. And the last person I want in the delivery room with me is my husband's ex. Even though we have a good relationship, still not somebody I want there with me in those first few hours of us as a family. And so this feeling of having to share something that should be so special and unique to us, it's prevalent.
Yeah.
Did you ever have moments of like, feeling territorial over your baby or?
Well, it's funny you say that as your current thought process because it took me years after I gave birth to my first son to realize how much I didn't like about the day he was born, aside from the fact that he was born, which is a beautiful, joyous moment. But I'm compartmentalizing that aspect of it and then the aspect that directly relates to my blended family and all the things that I would have done differently had I had the know-how and had I had the support, had I known what to ask for and how to ask to be supported. Those are things I had no idea, but like I can't even find the words for it because I didn't have any idea. And what happened on that day, and then there was days leading up to it, there was some talk between my husband and the girl's mom about what would happen on the day up. And I don't really feel like I was much a part of that conversation. They kind of were talking, oh, are the girls going to come to the hospital? And of course I wanted them to be the first to meet their baby brother. But like you said, if they're not with us, because it's not we're at the hospital delivering a baby, then they're at their mom's. Well, how are they going to get to the hospital without their mom being a part of that? You know, and at the time we all had a pretty, you know, decent relationship for the most part. We were all very cordial and friendly. So we weren't in a bad space, but I still didn't necessarily want to remember that day with her in it. And it took me a long time to be able to admit that and know that it's okay that I'm admitting that. And it didn't mean I didn't like this person. It didn't mean anything bad. It just meant that I have shared already so much. I'm going to continue sharing so much of our lives. Mm-hmm. This moment right here, I want to cling to in a different manner. And so when I realized that years later, it wasn't until I was pregnant with my second baby and I started to think of all the ways I wanted to advocate for myself and all of the ways that I wanted to protect this moment and protect it for our family. That's when I had a lot of reflective moments on how it happened for me the first time, that was my reality at the time and that I made the best decisions that I knew how to make with what I had at the moment. And then I had a second baby and I had a different experience. So, you know, when you know better, you do better. But yeah. It's so funny that you mentioned that because I have a direct memory of exactly what you're currently thinking about.
My sister-in-law, she's had two babies, Kevin's sister, and she is the most chill mom you will ever meet. She is so chill. She's so calm. She is so go with the flow. And every time I'm around her, I'm like, is it okay if I hold the baby? Do you want your baby back? Just tell me. Like, I expect her, this mama bear, to come out and be like, no, give me my baby. I need it. And I just know that that's the kind of mom I'm going to be. We face infertility for years. And so I'm going to feel fiercely territorial over this baby because it was such a long journey for us primarily, but then especially territorial, at least right now, that's how I feel, over the blended family part of my life. Because we have had to share in every fashion. We share our schedule. We share school supplies. We share conversations about upbringing and well-being and all of these things. And to finally have a choice over whether I'm going to share that stuff, I feel like I'm going to cling to the control that I have over this being mine.
Yeah. You know, my relationship with my husband's ex is not what it used to be. And it's certainly not what it was in the beginning. We have a very no contact relationship now. And I'm comfortable saying that because I don't think it's a bad thing. I think that sometimes, especially nowadays with social media, there's this toxic positive message going around with a lot of blended families that promotes friendship amongst the co-parents. And I think that that is wonderful. I really do think it's amazing when all of the parents are on the same page and everyone is one big happy honky-dory family. I think that's the goal, right? But that's not the reality for a lot of us. And I never thought that I would admit that publicly because it comes with so much of a negative connotation and I never wanted it to be that way. But I think that when I had my first baby, I continued sharing. I stayed a part of the team that was the pre-existing unit and I fit myself into it and I fit myself into their schedule and I fit myself into their lifestyles. And the way that they did things was the way that I did things because it was happening before I got there. So I figured, well, I'm outnumbered, so I got to do what these people are doing because this is what's working for them, right? But then I had my baby. And like you said, we've shared conversations about upbringing and we've shared this and we've shared that. And then it became like, okay, well, this one is, I have some skin in the game now. I get to say what this one does and I get to say how he's brought up and I get to say, and so like you said, you want to cling to that a little bit. And so one of the turning moments for me when I decided to lay some boundaries for our family and our relationship as it related to all of the people involved was I realized that the girls, my stepchildren, had three parents, essentially. They had mom, they had dad, and they had a stepmom who was advocating for them, who's on their team, making decisions, hopefully for the betterment of the twosome. And then I had the baby. And then I thought, well, I'm having this unrealistic expectation right now that their mom should also be making decisions that consider my child because it is for the unit. And I realized that that wasn't a fair expectation for me to have on another household. So that shifted my perspective and said, hey, these girls have three parents, but this boy has two. And I've got to focus on this unit right here. And I've shifted my energy now into raising up my family. And the girls are the bonus. So when they're there, they're the bonus to me. But they could no longer be the top priority for me because as parents, we're making decisions for the children. There are certain people that are making decisions for certain children. Mm-hmm. And when I realized that the team effort that I was putting into children that weren't mine wasn't going to be reciprocated when things that my child depended on was going to be affected. So I realized that I couldn't be on that team and maintain the level of productivity and emotional stability and clarity that I needed to operate for my son and for my family if I was still too involved in what was going on in the first family. You know what I mean? You just shift your focus, really, when your baby comes. It just forces you.
And we shouldn't feel guilty for that, for our focus shifting, for our energy shifting. You only have so many hours in a day. And like you said, when your child only has two parents instead of three or four on their team, it's going to require an uneven amount of your time and energy than if a child has four.
Exactly. But it's because, you know, I'm going to say this. When you're talking about situations like ours that involve other people, we're always trying to find the most respectful, graceful, tactful way to talk about ugly, nasty, uncomfortable things. And that is what creates this, like, well, I have to figure out how to say it without offending and defending and go, you know? And so I've just adopted the fact that sometimes it's not going to be pretty, but I want to give people what's real and mm-hmm. what's honest. And that may not be everybody's cup of tea, but the good thing is there's lots of other flavors of things you can drink. You don't have to drink this tea.
I appreciate you being honest and vulnerable and direct. I think that's what we need. I think that's especially what we need in conversations just like this, where we're in a very vulnerable position, especially if you are adding your first hours baby to the family. I, in my position, need to hear somebody say, be totally selfish. Recognize that your role is going to shift. Your time, energy, investment is going to shift. And that's okay. That's natural. You have permission to do that.
Yeah.
So recognizing that your time shifted in whose team you are playing for, that's how you describe it. Mm-hmm. Were there any other tangible ways that your role shifted when it came to your stepdaughters?
Yeah, I do think that physically I was on, like, there were things that just in those early weeks of having a new baby, I couldn't comb their hair for school. I couldn't, like, do all those cute little things. And I think that sometimes, like, you know, we talk to a lot of step parents that don't have, like, great relationships with their step kids, but I have great relationships with mine. So we did all those fun things, like hair. We go get manicures. We're, like, girling out to the max. And I couldn't do a lot of those things.
I'm looking ahead and worrying about what that may look like and kind of having conversations here and there to prepare Krista for what that looks like. It doesn't mean that I don't love you anymore. It doesn't mean that mm-hmm. I don't care about you and I'm not still in your corner. But if baby keeps me up all night, I'm not going to be up at 7 a.m. making your lunch or making you this gourmet breakfast before school, probably.
And I will say that that was with the first baby. So now we're in a different chapter where they're not 5 and 7, they're 10 and 12. So they have welcomed a new baby at a different stage of their lives, as the baby is a walking 1-year-old. So there's a tiny human that needs to be watched all the time. Whereas a few months ago, he's just laying around. He couldn't really do much, but now he's falling. He's busted his tooth. He's all over the place. So watching them now as big girls, preteens, taking care of their 4-year-old brother and their 1-year-old brother, I'm seeing a completely different side to them. And there has been some difficulty for me because whereas before I feel like I was entertaining the group on one accord, now with this age gap, we've got the big kids and we've got the little kids, and it requires a different mother in me to meet all of their needs. We've got a preteen, a 10-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 1-year-old. So there are days where somebody's needs are not met. Somebody doesn't like dinner. Somebody doesn't like something that happened today. And you can't please them all in one day. You've got to make peace with that. But because they're older, and much like Krista's a little bit older, I just tell them. I talk to them. I'm like, look, this is what's happening today, and this is where I need you to step up. So I've got 10 loads of laundry to do. If we all expect to have clean clothes tomorrow, I need you to step up. So for 5 minutes when I go downstairs to do the laundry, I need all eyes on baby, all hands on deck, everybody surround this kid, no accident. And then sometimes I'll come up and then I'll relieve them. And I'll talk to them about it after. And I say, you know what, guys, I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing here if it wasn't for you, for your help. Wouldn't be able to make that French toast for breakfast if it wasn't for you playing with the baby on the floor for an extra 10 minutes. So sometimes it feels like a lacking, but I try to make up for that by affirming them in another way so that they don't feel like they're left out of something, but that they're actually collectively a part of how our family is progressing today. So we are a team. Mom and dad are the leaders. You guys are the troops, and together we're going to make it to the end. And they really appreciate that concept because it's not like, hey, you've got to do this, and that means you don't get to play with the other ones because I need you to watch the baby. It's not like that in our house. For us, everything is a team effort. If I've got to make dinner, everyone's got to pull together. If you've got an assignment to do, then we're going to, you know, quiet the distractions on the back end. So I hope that that can be a reminder to you with your older girl that she's a part of the team, mm-hmm. and that's a good way to fill her cup so that she doesn't feel like she's on the outside of something, because she's going to be excited about her sibling no matter what. Even if, you know, they're annoying and they cry, she's still going to be thrilled to have them around. And I think it makes them feel better when they feel like this is mine too, you know?
Yeah, I love that perspective and the way you approach it with such respect for your stepdaughters, and you honor their value in the family instead of sometimes we treat our stepchildren with kid gloves. And if they're really young, sometimes we need to, but they are far more resilient than we give them credit for a lot of times.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We had to drop them off to fly back to Jamaica a couple weeks ago. So my younger stepdaughter has visibly the harder time, and we got to the gate and I saw her tears, and so then I started crying and she starts crying, and I'm just like, I just held her little face and I'm like, you can do hard things, and you've been doing them and you're doing them really well. And she's just crying. I look at my older stepdaughter and I'm like, are you going to, you're going to be okay, right? You know, we flew them unaccompanied, like, you know, under the care of the airport. And they've been doing it like this for a couple years now. And it doesn't get easier to say goodbye. And it doesn't get any easier to have to do this hard thing and get on an airplane and go back to another country and just have a very different lifestyle. And I just remind them that they can do hard things and that they do them so well and so gracefully, and that we're just so proud of how they have handled their very complicated situation at times. Even though it can be without difficulty in a lot of areas, it's still emotion. It's a lot of emotional unrest for them.
I'm completely putting myself back in my own shoes. When I was 7th, 8th grade, my dad had moved to Indiana. My mom was in Texas, and my dad and stepmom had 2 kids. I was only with my dad during summers and long breaks at school. And those goodbyes at the end of the summer, at the end of every break, were so emotional and so hard. I felt like my brother and sister had to relearn who I was every time I visited. We didn't have FaceTime back then. So, yeah. They had to relearn who I was, readjust to our relationship again every single visit. And it was so heartbreaking to leave a whole family behind and readjust to quote unquote real life back at my other home. So emotional, such a big transition. Let's dive into those transitions. Has it been challenging? So I hear these horror stories. And for me, they're horror stories because it's like my personal worst nightmare of your hour's baby crying and asking for their siblings once they've gone to their other home. Have you ever experienced this? And if so, like, what are your tips for getting through this? It's so hard.
I don't have any tips yet. I'm still trying to figure it out. In the earlier days when my son Lincoln was maybe 2 or 3, he understood on a very light scale that every couple days they would go and they would come, right? But in the last 2 years since we have shifted our entire schedule and that we are seeing them now on long breaks and summer, and we have that type of arrangement now, and he's older, it is so much harder to manage those big feelings because he asks for them, he holds pictures of them, he looks at them with sad eyes, and he wants to cry about it. And then you've got the girls who call and they're sad, and you're helpless because you're not even up the street. You can't even say, oh, well, I can take you for an extra day, or it's not like that. We've got real distance between us and real time separates us. So for my son, it's really hard. And my baby son, who's just learned how to say his sister's names, he's completely adores them and is adored by them. I think about him and how he's not going to have the same experience that his brother got to have with living with them more than we do now. So it's really hard, and it's something ongoing. And usually when my son falls into those days, I let him be sad, and I tell him that it's okay to be sad because it's sad and I miss them too. And we can be sad together, and we can call them and we can talk about, you know, some good times. We can just do something special to make us feel warm about it. But we certainly don't try to rush those feelings away, because, you know, I think it's good for children also to learn what it's like to miss people and what it's like to yearn for loved ones. I think those are great emotions for them to develop. It's unfortunate the manner in which they have to develop them sometimes, but it only adds to their emotional intelligence, which in the grand scheme of things is beneficial to their development and their existence. It's only going to deepen how they process feelings in the future. It's only going to encourage them to embrace quality time, because they know what limited time is like. You know what I mean? Like, you know, if you lived with your siblings every day, and of course that's the dream and that's ideal and that's fun. But if you have to have a situation like ours, then at least you've learned that time is limited. So the time that we do have, we make the most of it. And, you know, it's an ongoing process.
Yeah. I appreciate that perspective though, that we can teach them through these hard moments. You tell your girls that they can do hard things, and you're teaching your sons that they can do hard things as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful. I love it. Okay. $1 million question. You probably knew this was coming at some point. As stepmoms, there is a ton of pressure put on us to love our stepchildren like our own. And I'm not there yet, so I can't tell you what that love feels like on my side. I'm anticipating a love that is different for my own child. I can already feel an intense love with him inside my body. I mean, what does that look like in reality? Has your love shifted, or your perception of your love for your stepchildren compared to your sons?
Absolutely. I think that we are taught to love our stepchildren like our own, the age-old tale. And I think we do in the beginning, because you don't know any better when you don't have your own. So you think that you're loving them to this maximum capability that you would if you had your own child. But then you have your own child, and your definition of that changes. I had my children now, and I can honestly say that I don't love my stepchildren the way that I love my children. I love them big, and I love them deep, and I love them fiercely. But it is a love that knows boundaries, and it is a love that knows some condition. And that doesn't mean a bad thing. It just means that there's a filter that you have on in your mind as a step parent. And in that filter, you're asking yourself, is it okay for me to do this? Is this appropriate for me to do this? Should I do this? Or am I going to step on someone's toes, or am I going to offend someone? So with that, you can't possibly love that individual the same way that you love an individual that knows no condition, that knows no bounds. That child that's in you, came from you, is you get the last end-all, be-all, say-all over that life. But when it's the other ones who have a whole other set of values and another parental unit, another familial unit, that is so different. And it, there, you can't compare those two things. So for me, I love them big and I love them deep, but I love them different, and that's okay.
I think you bring up a really great point, which is that there is conditionality in our families. They are in our lives because of our partner. And should something, God forbid, happen to our relationships, then our stepchildren are no longer connected to us, at least not legally.
Mm-hmm.
And there is something to be said about a love that is guarded due to that conditionality.
But you know what? I will say that the love that I have for them is special in a way that is different from the kids that I gave birth to. They were my first babies because they taught me how to be a mom. They taught me that love is a choice sometimes.
I love your perspective. I love your positive outlook. I so appreciate your advice for me and for everyone else who is in my shoes and preparing for the transition of adding an hours baby to the family and how to prepare yourself, prepare your family for that transition, and to give everyone grace throughout that transition. I so appreciate you being here. I think this is the perfect place for us to wrap up. But before I let you go, will you please share with our audience the best way that they can follow you?
Yes, you guys can follow me on my Instagram. It's KimberlyKamish.King. And if you catch me there, then you can keep up with where you might see me next.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Thank you for being here, for being vulnerable and honest and sharing all of the knowledge you have to offer us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you so much for tuning in to the Stepmomming Made Easy podcast. We drop new episodes every Tuesday. I will see you right back here next week.